Blog Talk Radio.
This is Entertainment Life on the Sasha Marina Show, a show about the entertainment and music industry, where you get to hear from the top and up-and-coming stars, from amateurs to professionals. They're all just working hard for success. This show is to give those the opportunity to speak about their talents and what they're doing to succeed in their dreams. And now, here's your host, Sasha Marina.
Hello, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm your host, Sasha Marina, and you're tuned into the Sasha Marina Show. So today I have a very special guest. He's a filmmaker, producer, writer, director, mostly known for the film Geographically Desirable. Now, this film is a comedy. It's kind of those, like, you know, not really midlife, but, you know, woman in her midlife, and I guess, you know, she's consumed with work and her, you know, day-to-day lifestyle, and then all of a sudden she has a little situation in life thrown at her. And I guess the movie is really based on how she copes with that and what else has brought her way, and how pretty much how this woman copes with the whole situation, you know, and kind of breaking out of her day-to-day, you know, work consumption, routine. So Geographically Desirable, it's a comedy, like I mentioned. The trailer is quite funny, and it's available for everyone to see on YouTube. If you search Geographically Desirable official trailer, it'll pop up. But anywho, the filmmaker, like I said, I'll be talking to Mike Krawinski. So without further ado, I'm going to have him live on the air so he can tell us a little bit more about this project and his process, I guess. So good evening, Mike. How are you?
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time, Mike. So like I mentioned, Geographically Desirable, it's a comedy. From what I got from the movie, you know, it like I mentioned, it looks like a woman just trying to cope with certain problems that were thrown at her, you know, in a certain point of life, trying to break away from that routine. It looks like she's, you know, very busy woman day to day. She has like different, like in the video and the trailer. I mean, she, you know, you see her falling asleep outside on her porch. You see her falling asleep on her couch. You see her falling asleep at anywhere that had a pillow. So it kind of tells you about her lifestyle, you know, it's a routine, she's exhausted, and all of a sudden something happens. So what was, I guess, the idea for the story? What got you writing this sort of story?
The film actually came from my own experience. As you described the film really well, the story is about this woman who's consumed with her job in TV news. She works for a network. She's a producer for a network news organization, and she just loves her job, and you know, has been doing it forever. Basically lives and breathes this. I mean, I suspect you've met people like this who really, that's all they can really talk about, and they just prefer to be at work. Well, that's what Nicole is, and she loves it. But the only downside to her job is that she works the overnight shift, and so when she's awake, everybody's asleep, and vice versa. And it just plays havoc with her. With her sleep patterns, and, you know, which is why she's falling asleep. But the story itself came from my own experience. I worked for ABC News in Washington for 29 years, and, write what you know. I mean, I spent many a long night at, working the graveyard shift, preparing for the morning show. Which is exactly what Nicole does. So that's where I've basically got the genesis for the idea. And when I started the film, originally I was going to make the character a guy, but I just felt that there could be a lot more. You could do a lot more with a woman in the main role, because there's a lot more that she has to think about, you know, it, you know, with her, you know, going forward in life, and you know, what does she want to do? You know, the character herself, she's in her mid-30s, you know, and, you know, at that time, you know, whether a woman, I discussed this with a screenplay consultant who is a woman, and she says, you know, whether a woman decides whether she wants to have children or not, she's certainly thinking about it in her mid-30s. And so, you know, we had some moments in the film where, you know, it gives her a moment to think, okay, is it time to settle down? But she's still just like a hard-charging executive. And so it takes this this experience of her, of an uncle dying and in a small town, and he gives her a house, his house and his dog, which are responsibilities she doesn't want. But it makes her kind of, you know, look at her life. You know, the, you know, this town is just, you know, kind of really sweet people, and, you know, and it's just a different lifestyle than what she's used to, you know, but she's forced to spend time there.
Okay. So that's definitely a mouthful there, Mike. And the fact that, you know, I kind of like that you mentioned that you thought about it being a man, but then there was more elements that you can add, making this character a woman. Now, you know, I've taken several script writing classes and, you know, and classes in this medium as well. And it's somewhat of a fact that men tend to write better women roles than women tend to write women roles. So if that made any sense.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, yes, and, you know, a couple of my professors, you know, have actually mentioned this to me, and I believe that it's true, whether it be in screenwriting or in novels. Men tend to really, I don't know if it's like the genuine point of view that they have of the woman, that they just tend to write better woman roles. So, this woman, just by seeing the actress, and I know it's the actor's job to really put your work on the screen, you know. So what you wrote down, it's their job to portray it. And just by seeing this woman on screen, I can tell that I can really feel what you wrote, you know, with the meaning that you intended it without really even writing or reading your script. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
Well,
you know, I will tell you that you know, Blair Bowers, who plays Nicole, I feel really fortunate that, you know, she came along, you know, because, I mean, you know, not only is she, you know, not only was she like a really just excellent comedic talent, you know, for this role, but, you know, we would be going over the script and she would tell me, you know, she's like, you know, Mike, you know, they don't, you know, a woman wouldn't say that in this situation. and I was like, well, what would she say? And she'd say, well, she'd do it, she'd say it this way. And I'd say, oh, you know, and so we got to develop this really good working relationship, you know, where, you know, I would depend on her, you know, to make it more real, you know, make her character more realistic. I mean, not only did, you know, was her acting just superb, but the ideas that she had, the changes that she thought she should make to the character were just like right on target.
Okay. So that's always good too, you know. Were you part of a process as well, or was there somebody else casting your role?
Well, you know, we had what is it called, Paul Farrenkopf. We had a service that did it as well, and
okay.
But, you know, basically I made the final call on all the actors, and I was in all the audition processes. But actually originally, when Blair came in, you know, I thought, you know, because she has, she has this neat comedic ability, and I was thinking, oh, you know, she'd make a really good, the roommate character. And I thought that she would be really good as the roommate. But, you know, the more I thought about it, the more it is like, you know, I was like, wait a minute, you know, she's got enough strength in her character, you know, in her acting ability that I think that maybe she could pull off the lead. And she did. She came back, she read for it, and, you know, it was just, as I say, it was just a, you know, it worked, and you know, it was a really good professional relationship we had.
Okay. So thanks to your, you know, to your overall production value and your cast, and your film has been, you know, official selection in several independent film festivals, such as the Real Independent Film Extravaganza in Washington, D.C., the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, that's very close to me, and the NYC Independent Film Festival. I'd like to congratulate you for those. You know, is this one of your first films?
Well, it's actually my second film. My first film, The Next Nick, was about, you know, also about change and transition. It was about a guy in his 50s who worked for the same company for 25 years and then was one day was just let go without any warning. And he knew that he could not make the same money in the same field ever again. So he just decided to just try something new. And the film, you know, basically follows his exploits as he tries to figure out what he wants to do next.
Okay. So was that kind of a personal experience or a kind of firsthand experience for you as well?
I'm sure you've heard, you know, with the news, news departments all over the country, everybody's downsizing, everybody's, you know, all the news operations are getting smaller, you know, doing more with less. And what happened was they were offering buyouts at ABC, and it just came at the right time. I was, like, ready to move on, and, you know, I'd had a good run, and you know, the place is great. I love, you know, working there, and, you know, but I was ready. And, you know, and so I took this buyout and I started to live a little more frugally and decided to become a filmmaker. And, you know, it's been, you know, you think, you know, with your background, with a background in news and understanding video and understanding editing and things like that, you think you can be a filmmaker, but I will tell you that there, you know, it is a learning curve going from, you know, like, you know, television news to narrative filmmaking. You know, there's things that, you know, there's that are just ingrained in you, you know, when you're doing a news story, you know, where you have to tell all the facts, you know, but in a film, you know, you can leave certain things out, and the audience will just figure it out. And, you know, those are all things that, you know, that I've learned over the last few years about, you know, storytelling. Is, you know, sometimes, you know, things can be implied, you know, you don't have to, you know, be really exacting, you know, and, you know, just it's better to create a mood than it is to, you know, try to, like, cross all the T's and dot all the I's. So, you know, it's been really fun, you know, and, you know, I'm proud of both of the films. They were just, you know, they were really good. They're just, you're a really good piece of work, I think.
Well, definitely. I believe you're right about that. It's better when you don't spill all the beans, you know, like you said, you know, just set the mood and refer certain things. There's no need to put everything out there. I think a perfect example, I don't know what you believe, but, you know, especially in filmmaking, things that we see very boldly sometimes in certain scenes in movies where the same nude scene, you know? In certain films, it's somewhat insinuated, you know, they're in bed, you know, they're naked. Obviously, there's something going on there. Whether in other movies, they decide to, like, expose all of that graphically, you know?
Right.
So, like, it's a, you know, there's there's always a balance and the taste. People tend to like, you know, the tastefulness better if you're going to insinuate a such scene in a movie, you know. Don't spill all the beans. We know what's going on.
Right.
So,
my wife and I were talking about it, and she says, you know, sometimes, you know, because we talk a lot about it. She's a composer, and we talk about and she did the music for the film for Geographically Desirable. And, you know, she was saying that, you know, sometimes you don't need any dialogue at all, you know, to get your point across. And it's true, you know, sometimes, just facial expressions or action, you know, can, you know, really, you know, set a wonderful scene, you know. And I'm not saying that a film should be, like, dialogue-less, but... or dialogue free, but I, you know, it is possible to create a great mood without dialogue.
Definitely. So I'd like to know, where is this movie being screened? I see on your Twitter feed that it'll be screened in November in Fort Lauderdale and Cinema Paradiso. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. Okay. You saying you're close to Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, I'm in Miami, so. Pretty much relatively
well,
close.
I hope you can come up and take a look, or come across and take a look. You know, we'll be there for 2 days at February 19th and 20th. We have a nice spot, like at 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. I believe on both of those on those 2 days. And then before that, we're at the New York City Independent Film Festival. Very proud of that, and then we're going to have the world premiere. Since this is a DC Virginia production, we're having our world premiere at the Real Independent Film Extravaganza here in DC, and that's a great venue. They do a lot. They do, you know, independent film, domestically made independent films, but they also rely heavily on films in the D.C. Baltimore region. And, you know, so there's just a great, wonderful amount of talent here. So it's good to, you know, kind of get with that crowd. And, you know, but, you know, I'm hoping that I can get a lot of people from the news business, the D.C. news business, you know, to come out and take a look at the film.
Well, definitely. And I feel like as a filmmaker, you know, being able to expose your own work and, you know, in your own city, or, you know, that's definitely always an honor. And I'm sure you and your crew will enjoy that very much. And the fact that, yeah, I mean, I hope that this can be shown in, or people from more media outlets, you know what I mean, get, you know, are able to see this and really relate to the story you're trying to put out there.
Right.
That,
well, we're gonna try and release it, you know, just, what do you call it, in the U.S. market. We're going to try to release it in, you know, January 2015. You know, we're the drill. You know, I'm going through the distribution process now and trying to figure out what to do there. You know, hoping for good news. And, we'll see what happens. But, you know, this is just one of the process of filmmaking these days. You know, you have... You know, the equipment is less expensive, you know, for, like, high-quality stuff. But then in the end, when you have a nice product, you know, it's like, harder to get distribution because so many people are doing films these days.
Yeah, that definitely is a process. That, I interview a lot of filmmakers, a lot of upcoming filmmakers as well, you know, and I always like to ask people, pretty much what hardships and what have they learned from them, you know, in the filmmaking process. You know, there's a lot that goes into a movie. You know, there's the pre-production and, most importantly, the post-production. And, you know, what's in between. But those two parts of the production itself are very important. So the middle part can come out, you know, it's effective. So, In the process of making this film, what sort of hardships did you find yourself in?
Well, you know, I will say that, you know, because of my background, you know, mm-hmm. the post-production, you know, was, you know, for me was, you know, pretty, I don't want to say easy, but it was definitely less stressful than the first two parts.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, if I were to, you know, I have to admit, I do like being on the set and, you know, watching the actors say the words that you wrote down. You know, if mm-hmm. there's something really neat about that, and like a lot of times they'll do something that is just, you hadn't even envisioned them, you know, somebody saying something with in a particular inflection or with a particular piece of emotion that you hadn't envisioned. And, you know, when you are, you know, actually doing the production, it's just really kind of fun, you know, like, they may not do it the way you had originally thought, but the, you know, the outcome is better than you had imagined. I would say that the part that I probably like the least is the pre-production, you know, and only because it's just, you know, weeks of meetings and, you know, shot sheets and, you know, and but it's something you have to do. I mean, you have to prepare. You have to, you know, and if you don't prepare, you know, the production itself is going to, you know, it's going to be lacking and, you know, people are going to get cranky and it's just going to be, you know, it's just going to be a, you know, a difficult shoot, you know. And so, you know, better to get that, you know, the weeks of meetings out of the way and get your shot sheets and your, you know, get all that stuff out of the way early, you know, and everybody's on the same page. So, you know, when a problem happens, you don't have to, it doesn't snowball, you know.
Definitely, definitely. So, Mike, where can people, you know, follow up with the film and so forth on social networks, et cetera?
Well, you know, we have our Facebook page, you know, Geographically Desirable. And then, you know, the website is geodesire.com. And those are the two main places that, you know, you can find out, you know, when the film is playing at various festivals and, you know, what will happen, you know, with getting it out to the general public after the festival season is over. I suspect that, you know, I'm hoping that the film will be out for wide release by mid-January. And, you know, after that, you know, just hoping for good sales.
Definitely. And, and obviously distribution, that would be great. So just to kind of go over what Mike just said, ladies and gentlemen, keep up with them, you know, preferably on their Facebook page. They've pretty much posted where the films will be are being released at, like he mentioned, in D.C., in Fort Lauderdale, and in NYC. So look out for Geographical Desirable here in the East Coast. Are you planning to take this to the West Coast anytime soon, perhaps next year?
Well, the thing is, so far, you know, there's only been a couple of festivals that I've submitted to on
mm-hmm.
the West Coast, and I didn't get into them. But, you know, I'm hoping for some, you know, I don't really want to jinx it, but I'm hoping for some good news in the next few days for festivals. And then, you know, I was talking to what we call a sales agent not too long ago, and we're hoping there's a particular distribution company that is possibly interested in. One of their sales pitches is that they'd like to get theater screenings in New York and L.A. So if mm-hmm. I could do that, that would be, you know, before they do the online model. And so, you know, if that works out, that would be wonderful. I could get, you know, get some screenings in Los Angeles.
That would be amazing. That
yeah.
would be awesome, Mike. So, you know, I'd like to thank you one more time for being on the show this evening. And I wish you continued luck and success with this film. I'm sure that you'll be continuing to do great.
No, thank you, Sasha, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Of course, and I mean, I know that you're still really in the rumble of this film, and it takes a lot post production, and like you mentioned, distribution and all that good stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But are you in the process of perhaps writing something for the near future, or are you not ready to spill any of those things yet?
Oh no, I've got actually I've got like three or four different films going, or you know, story ideas going. In various
mm-hmm.
stages, and you know, one thing has me like wrapping about, well, there's like four stories, and one of them has me wrapping three of those stories together into a single film, and just individual characters are what those ideas were, you know, like different characters in the film. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I you know, as you know, the writing process to get it right, you know, that takes some time. I'm giving myself, you know, at least a year, you know, to,
mm-hmm.
to you know, get, you know, lock the new story in. But that'll be good. It'll give me a chance to, you know, hopefully get some financing, you know, and, you know, with, what do you call it, the hopefully successful run of Geographically Desirable.
Of course. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that It's screening in Fort Lauderdale. I'll be there.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, if you come, please. Yeah, you know, I'll be there. You know, I'll be there for both days. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I hope you get, if you're there, you know, tap me on the shoulder.
All righty, Mike. No problem. You
okay.
Take care, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
No problem. Bye-bye. So there you have it, Mike Kravinsky. Make sure to keep up with him and this wonderful film of his through Twitter, Geo Desire. On Facebook is Geographically Desirable Movie, and the website geographicallydesirable.com. You know, and check out the trailer on YouTube, Geographically Desirable official trailer. I'm pretty sure it's going to be the first video that pops up. So you can't miss it. And as for us, keep up with us at thesashamarinashow.com. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram, all that good stuff, at Sasha Marina. Like our page at The Sasha Marina Show. Download our app on Google Play, BlackBerry World. That's easiest to keep up with this here, our podcast. And that's about it. So thank you so much for tuning in today. I appreciate it. Shout out once again to Mike and his film, Geographically Desirable. I'm looking forward to seeing it in Fort Lauderdale come this November. All righty then. Bye-bye.